Welcome to Living with AI, where we get various contributors together to look at how artificial intelligence affects us, what impact it has on our well-being, for instance. Today, we're looking at whether machines can make good choices. We're on season 3 of the podcast, so one good choice could be to look up our previous episodes. Links are in the show notes. Or if you search for TAS Hub, you'll find us, I'm sure. As we record this, it's the 10th of May, 2023. I'm saying that because AI moves so quickly. This episode is a project episode where we group a few TAS Hub projects around a theme. And as I've said, today's theme is about whether machines can make good choices. If you've not heard of the TAS Hub, it's a trustworthy autonomous systems hub. And there's plenty of details about that if you look up the TAS Hub website. Joining our podcast today to discuss their projects are Benedict, Sashini and Asaya. I'll just ask each of you to sort of introduce yourselves, and then once we've met everyone, we'll go around the projects one by one and we'll hear a bit more about what you've been doing. And once we've heard about those projects, we can have a little discussion. So let's start with Asaya.
Thank you, and hi everyone. I'm Asaya Salehi, Senior Research Fellow in Computer Science, University of Southampton, and I'm PI of a TAS Hub project called Vestas, Verifiably Safe and Trusted Autonomous Systems. In Vestas, we're proposing a multidisciplinary approach to utilize social science and computer science, aiming to impact trust levels of stakeholders in autonomous systems.
And Sashini.
Hi, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here, and welcome to this episode, everybody, whoever who are listening out there. So I'm Sashini. I am based at King's College London. I am a postdoctoral researcher in the TAS Hub itself, and I'm the PI of the TAS Hub integrated project called, which we call Leap of Faith. It's a bit of an artsy name, but we are very much focused on answering this question whether or not autonomous machines, robots, drones, what have you, whether or not they can be designed to persuade a human being to do something based off of trust. It sounds a very out there kind of a topic, but we've made a lot of progress on that, and I'm looking forward to talking to you all about that in the next hour or so.
Hi, thank you. I am Benedict. I'm a postdoc research associate for King's College, and I work for the governance node within the TAS Hub. My work is basically focused on explainable AI, especially for medical applications. And I am leading a project about the ethics of trust, on which I can give more details later.
Fantastic. It's great to meet you all, and thank you all for taking the time to join us on the podcast. As I said, we'll get a bit more detail then. So we'll go to Asaya, and just if you could tell us a little bit more about Vestas then, please.
Yes, absolutely. When we're talking about AI, replacing human decision-making with machine decision-making, can result in big challenges associated with the stakeholders' trust in autonomous systems. And we all know that trust itself is has got a challenging interpretation as well. Meaning of trust can be very different between different categories of stakeholders, different users, even in different kind of domains. In Vestas, we believe it is a key point to understand how different stakeholders perceive an autonomous systems as trusted. I'll give you a very small, simple example. If you imagine an autonomous vehicle, so autonomous vehicle as autonomous system can be seen trusted by a specific group of users. For example, when you are talking about delivering groceries, it is easier to trust the autonomous vehicles. But when you're talking about transportation, for example, maybe the trust interpretation will be completely different and will be more difficult to reach. And this sort of different categories of stakeholders and different domains is something that we are investigating in Vestas project. And in Vestas, we are proposing multidisciplinary approach to assess the trust level, if you consider trust as a social science notion and safety techniques as the computer science notion, then we can talk about socio-technical approaches. There are lots of works has been done in literature review in the state of art about the technical solutions for the safety. But in Vestas, we are exploring how these technical solutions can impact the levels of trust in stakeholders. I'll just give you one opening sentence here, and I'll leave it later in the podcast we can talk about. And we are looking to how making awareness about the existing technical solutions for the stakeholders can impact their level of trust. Yeah, that's it for now.
Brilliant. Could I also then ask Sashini just to take us through, you know, the leap of faith, or send us across the leap of faith? I'm not sure.
Well, yes. So in leap of faith, we are specifically interested in human-robot interactions. As you know, we've already got autonomous systems, robots, drones integrated into our day-to-day lives. We've got autonomous delivery services where this little cart comes to you fully autonomous with your groceries. I think that's already deployed in certain parts in the UK. And we've got rescue drones that are being used by search and rescue units, first responders, and even the London Fire Brigade. So all these autonomous machines, very capable, very smart machines, they are being increasingly co-located with human beings. And what we are looking at is when these machines come into contact with humans who may or may not have any relationship or have seen the machine at all, might be hesitant towards interacting with the machine. When these machines come into contact with people of different, you know, capabilities, tendencies towards technologies, their biases. When these systems come into contact with these different types of people, trusts and when the interaction that occurs between the machine and the human requires some sort of trust. What we are exploring in our project is whether we can design these complex machines to generate that trust instantaneously. How can we embed these systems with capabilities, be it messaging, be it physical characteristics, be it physical appearances and things like that? What's the right blend of these capabilities coupled with what the machine says during the interaction? How does that correct blend impact a creation of trusted interaction between the human and the machine? As far as the project is concerned, we are for the time being restricted to simulating these interactions in hypothetical scenarios like evacuations and office assistance type of stuff. But moving forward, we are looking into developing a few real-life case studies that involve emergency responders and even medical professionals, which I will be happy to talk about in a little bit.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And Benedict, can you tell us about methodological perspectives on the ethics of trust and responsibility of autonomous systems, please?
Yeah, so it's a project that is between two nodes within the Task Hub. So it's the governance node, which is where I'm working, and the functionality node located in Bristol University. The main goal basically is to have each node learning from each other and understand how their approach differ or can merge into some similar frameworks around trust and trustworthiness. So it's a lot of discussion and also some analysis of case studies that we are doing just now. In more details, we explore the theoretical and empirical approaches to understanding ethics of trustworthiness in autonomous systems. So the governance nodes approach is more theoretical. It's more based on conceptual frameworks that relate to social trust, moral, legal responsibility, and how trust is built within the actors of technology and the users themselves. And the functionality node takes a more empirical approach, which is more undertaking research with stakeholders to inform how trust is built and how trustworthiness works within all the actors of technology and the users. So our hypothesis is that theoretical and empirical approaches conduct to ethics that have different limitations, and different strength. But they can inform and complement each other. And what we are doing in this project is discussing our different approaches and try to find how to fill different gaps and how we can merge some similar approach. What we want to do in the long term is to test our hypothesis of this approach of trust and this both empirical, theoretical differences, how they can be tested in case studies, especially in medical applications. So we look at mostly automatical diagnosis and how AI-assisted diagnosis interfere in the trustworthiness dynamics in the medical relation between patients and clinicians. And we mostly have discussions and we jointly will publish papers about this, and we also will organize some panels and workshops next year to open the discussion to other nodes within the Task Hub.
Fantastic. I know AI has played a big role in the kind of medical diagnosis and being able to kind of screen through things at extremely high speed, but obviously in making that process better for the clinicians so that they don't have to kind of wade through every single, I don't know, say x-ray or whatever. But obviously the implications there of a false kind of positive and false negative are quite serious, aren't they? Is that the sort of thing you're going to be talking about?
Yes, it's kind of the limit case that we need to look at. But the hypothesis behind this is that we would not put to the general public an assisted tool that would make such mistakes because it's too important. So we assume that it should not happen, and in case it happens, the main purpose of this discussion is more determining how it affects trustworthiness and also how a responsibility framework can help assessing the quality of the tool.
Perhaps needs a leap of faith to get there. I don't know, that kind of terrible segue to get over to Sashini and ask a bit, because again, life and limb, you know, when you're in rescue situations, we are talking about potential life and death situations, aren't we? So, I mean, we know that when people get to trusting these systems, they're often more successful than kind of manual methods. It's just, there's a hump to get over in terms of the kind of graph of trust, if that's an extremely terrible way of putting it. What do you think about that?
Yes, I agree with that idea, actually. And even in the situation where I think I'm beginning to realize that given a situation, building of trust and how the trustworthiness of the machine that comes to help you in that situation, that connection between the machine and the human depends a lot on whether or not the human has a choice in the matter. Given the situation, for example, take a rescue situation. If the only, say you are in a sinking ship and an autonomous rescue boat comes to rescue you, and in that instance, whether your decision to the only options you have is just to get on the boat or get killed, you'll ideally take that self, you will go into the self-preservation mode and kind of like say, okay, this is the help I have, and I will take this help anyway, regardless of this, regardless whether I trust this or not. So I think in certain situations when we talk about trust and taking a leap of faith towards interacting with the machine in a trustworthy context, I think it's a discussion we, as researchers, we should have whether or not the scenario actually builds or gives an opportunity for the person to create trust, and not work, operate in a binary mode where you either do it or something good happens, you don't do it and you are in a perilous situation, that sort of thing.
I know we've talked on a podcast before about the idea of, okay, something much less kind of perilous, where you're given the option of I'm going to use Uber as an example. You can take an Uber driver now who will, you know, is autonomous and will come in 5 minutes, or you can wait 15 minutes for one which is not autonomous. How desperate are you to get to the place you're going, and how deeply do you feel one way or the other about autonomous vehicles? And as you say, sometimes the fact that you don't have much choice means that the trust is kind of built automatically almost. Asya, you wanted to talk.
Thank you. Yeah, I take the Sachini's example, the rescue example, as introducing a new dimension to what we're doing in Vestas. What we propose in Vestas is to consider the different domains of application and different categories of stakeholders, which will impact the level of trust and the meaning of trust to the stakeholders. But what I get from the rescue example, which I call it safety critical systems, is that also the new dimension of situation, when it's the situation of, you know, sinking in water, so perhaps we can reach the higher level of trust more easily. So I will take this as a new exploring dimension to the project board.
Yeah, perhaps we don't set those situations up but then you could simulate this potentially, right? In gaming, or, you know, some kind of simulations, I suppose you could put somebody in a position where in the game they lose their life if they don't take that choice. It's not quite as perilous. Go on.
Yeah, I would say, imagine if you have a same category of a stakeholder within the same domain, but with different situation, as you said, for example, gaming and another situation. So this situation with keeping the other two factors same, but even the situation is affecting the level of trust. So that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I will. It's an interesting one, because they're all kind of different ways of building trust, aren't they? Just we've got some very extreme ends of the spectrum going on here. And this then comes back to the kind of overarching idea of this particular episode, of the idea of the choices. What have we found the machines doing in these? Has this been simulated? Have the choices been good? I suppose I'm wondering, anyone got any kind of cast iron examples of good or bad choices?
Well, I will follow that question up with a question. Good for whom?
Yeah. Well, then you know, it's obviously there is subjective and objective, and lots of your projects have approached these problems or dilemmas. But yeah, good for Hume. Hopefully, the person interacting with the system is the person, hopefully, who you want a good outcome for. But yeah, there's an overarching thing where that might be a bad decision for a wider kind of group. But that we may be getting into extreme ethics here.
Oh yes, that's always fun, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we talk about good choices, it is really depending on what do we mean by good. I take the interpretation of good in Vestas project as trusted choices, because we do concern about level of trust and how the technical solutions can affect the level of trust. But good in other projects, so I like to ask Sachini and Benedict, how do they interpret good in their domain of project?
Well, should we start? Yeah, we'll start with you, Benedict.
Yeah, so I think from my perspective and my project, it's more about how the decision will impact the people using the machine. And if the impact is mostly positive, I guess it's a good choice. And also, it's also a long time process, because there is one decision doesn't have one impact, but it's also, especially in medical application, a long-term process, and each decision has long-term consequences. So it's hard to determine if at one instant one decision is good or not. It's more what are the positive impacts, and how much is it positive in long-term is probably a question I would ask more.
Yeah, there's too much nuance, isn't there, I suppose, particularly with anything medical. You know, you fix, I'm holding air quotes up here, you fix one problem with somebody's health and it may well lead to side effects or other things, and things that may not even be noticed for years to come. Can't help but think of the animated film Big Hero 6. If you haven't seen it, it has a automated medic.
Baymax.
Who asks you at the end of your session to let him know if you're satisfied with your care, which, you know, I don't know, is that the sort of thing you need to do at the end of each interaction? Were you satisfied with this? But you don't know what happens 6 months down the line, do you? I don't know. It's interesting, just briefly coming back to ASIO with the Vestas, because the project is different categories of stakeholders, but also different domains of application. So what sorts of things were you looking at? What sorts of areas did you look at? It's nice and vague in the description. So.
It is, yeah. It is. So in the proposal, we are aiming to cover different range of stakeholders and different domains. But what we didn't expect is the complexity with the ethics approval that took us, took us at half of our project time, which wasn't a full-time researcher. So we are a little bit lag behind to deliver things. But it's just started with having some stakeholders, nominated as stakeholders from DSTL. Not necessarily a military application, but what is being provided is from the DSTL industrial partner. So we are going to approach stakeholders with different kinds of tools, from surveys, interviews, focus groups, and finally we are aiming to have a joint workshop to see how the awareness about the technical solution can impact the level of trust of stakeholders. And this is something that I think I take this opportunity to talk about in introduction. I said I leave it later to talk about some details of that. This is the most interesting part of our project to me, that and this is sounds quite novel to us. Lots of work has been done in terms of trust verification and safety techniques to make the autonomous system safe. But what we are doing in Vestas is how raising awareness about the existing safety technical techniques can affect level of trust in the stakeholders. We are exploring in Vestas different, you know, approaches to making awareness. One of them is public engagement. So with public engagement, we are aiming to engage stakeholders in different level of engagement. One of the identified challenges in our project is the effective communication with non-experts stakeholders. We are planning to make the public engagement activity that any level of stakeholders with any level of knowledge can engage with the activity. And the activities are aiming to raise awareness about the techniques and then redo all of the assessment things like the interviews and surveys with the stakeholders to see if this new piece of knowledge which we provided to them affected the level of trust or not. So yeah, this is the core I can talk about in
I mean, it's so difficult to quantify, isn't it? The idea of trust, I mean, you can do surveys, you can ask people to rate things on a scale, but everybody's scale is different. Benedict, you also, you know, your project was to do with perhaps having workshops and things like that. Is this something you're challenged with as well? The kind of level of trust, you know, rating it.
We have a different definition of trust as well, which is another issue. And while we're having this project, is that everyone's approach of trust and factors of trust is very different. Depending on the expertise of people, because for example, the people I'm working with are from a bioethics background, philosophical background, so they will have a different approach than a computer scientist, which we are in my node. So because of this, we try to compare and merge some like idea we can have in common in what we think is trust. For example, one of one of our perspective on this is that trust in machine is a very simple vision of it. There are different things that people trust when they're using an autonomous system. And one big factor is the people behind the autonomous system more than the tool itself. So who's owning the system, who's proposing it to them, who they are using it with. It's more the people's interaction around them that would impact trust more than just the tool. But there are other factors that are inherently related to how the tool is efficient, how it's transparent, how they understand it, how they interact with it. So all these are different category or different types of trust, I would say that way. One is more related to the human dynamic around the system, and one is more about the liability of the system and how people feel confident using it. There are many, many works around this, and trust factors are still studied a lot. For example, I've studied the link between explainability, transparency, and trust, and it's not that simple. Sometimes just the fact that a system is accurate and working well makes people trust it more than if they would just understand or if it was just transparent. They just want something that works well. So it also depends on the context.
It is a strange one. I mean, my go-to example of this is I buy a second-hand car, and the more journeys it completes, the more I trust it, when actually, counterintuitively, the more journey it completes, the more likely it is to go wrong at some point as parts wear out or whatever. I mean, the other thing, as you kind of think touched on, is this idea of, well, trusting something because you've had good experience of it, or trusting something that's not going to be doing something, I don't know, behind your back or doing things you don't understand. It's such a tricky thing to kind of put into a box almost, isn't it? Back to the idea of kind of choices. That again can be a difficult thing, because, you know, we've got the idea of choosing yes or no, or then more nuanced questions like, you know, multiple choice, through to things that we're seeing, you know, these big projects like ChatGPT, which you can ask it something and it will choose to write an entire essay for you if you like. How do we look at kind of choices and kind of like, what am I trying to say? How do we rate a machine's ability to make choices? Is there something you can build into your kind of, you know, projects to about whether the choices are the correct choice at the right time? How do you do that?
As far as the project is concerned, we have self-constrained ourselves thinking, okay, the scenarios that we are going to simulate in our experiments in Leap of Faith project are all founded on the machine being able to make a good choice. So we are running on the assumption, which is wrong and very restrictive when deploying these machines in the real world. Our hypothesis for the sake of the project is that the decision the machine is going to make when interacting with a human will always be the right decision or the good choice. You know, as we talked about, as Benedict brought this up a little while ago, there's always this temporal aspect of a good choice. As far as the project, a Leap of Faith project is concerned, we are looking at making instantaneous good choices in the sense the interactions that we are trying to simulate with human-robot interactions are very short in duration. The robot approaches you, tells you to do something, and you do it. Like I said, the assumption in that scenario is what the robot is telling you to do is the right thing. Based off of that assumption, we are further looking into expanding our project on the ethical implications of such choices, because the machine is, at the end of this project, we will know the right blend of capabilities a machine can have to instill trust in a person, which will result in the person doing something the machine asks you to do. And we talked about this a little while ago, in the sense there are objective measurements of trust that we can capture when an interaction takes place, besides the subjective ratings that we get from surveys and other qualitative measurements. And compliance is such an objective measurement. When a machine tells you to do something, do you do it? And it's been a long-established objective measurement in the trust literature that compliance, if compliance equates to trust, and as we have found out in our simulations and experiments, that in and of itself is a very muddled concept, because given the context, given the scenario, your compliance may not come strictly from trust. There could be like 100 different myriad kinds of things that are intrinsic to your personality, intrinsic to the situation, intrinsic to the robot itself that's trying to converse with you, that will cause you to comply with something. So measuring even what's being referred to as objective measurements in a trusted interaction is a challenging, and it's kind of like what keeps me going in this project. I want to investigate further to see how we can isolate these specific traits that pinpoints us toward trust and, you know, abstract us away from all the noise that surrounds it. I think that's an interesting thing.
And I'm also imagining, particularly in kind of scenarios, maybe we take the one where the autonomous boat has turned up to try and save you, where the sailor is thinking, well, I'll give it a few more minutes, I'm not sure yet whether to, okay, the water is rising, now I'm going to comply, and now I'll get on because I don't have a choice, right? Sometimes the nuance is stripped away by by the data collection method, right?
That's right, that's absolutely right.
If we're talking about, you know, that responsible research and innovation, is that built into all projects here, or tell me about it? Should we just go around the room, as it were?
Yeah, so in terms of when it comes to RRI, and in because in Vestas we are approaching with stakeholders, so we are cautious of following the RRI rules in terms of being inclusive, to cover different categories of stakeholders, and also being contextual, if you like, in covering different domain of applications. To be honest, the RRI aspect is covered with our social science researcher. I'm the computer science side of the project, but I'm aware that they are having some RRI framework to approach the stakeholders.
Great. Benedict, how's RRI being addressed in your project?
So because the people working in my project are from the responsibility framework project, they work on making responsibility frameworks. So their contribution in the project is to see and study how responsibility frameworks can impact trustworthiness frameworks and how they can be intricated together. So especially in terms of medical applications, responsibility is a massive question, is one of the most important probably, also because of the regulation around that's very important. And because we are looking especially at this kind of application, we do consider the responsibility as a factor of trust and as something that should impact every approach that we are thinking of.
Great stuff, thank you. And Sushini, tell us about the RRI in your project Leap of Faith.
Well, we are pretty big on RRI, specifically because of the nature of the project, because at the end of the day, we are trying, the products of this research will inform the research communities, the general public, about how trust can be created with external, like with the right blend of physical attributes of a autonomous machine. And that's a scary thing. And it's what we've taken into consideration, because of this very issue, we've taken into consideration how we are designing our experiments for our research purposes, as well as getting our stakeholders involved in our project tasks early on and making sure that they are involved throughout the life cycle of the project. And we found that the RRI tools that the Trustworthy Autonomous Hub produce, specifically the prompt and practice cards that they designed specifically for facilitating RRI conversations within the team, we found them to be very useful in shaping our research and being mindful about where the risks are in the research process itself, as well as how moving forward when the research eventually goes out into the public.
I appreciate you all had the choice of as to whether to join us today, and appreciate that the listeners to this podcast have a choice to listen. So thanks for listening this far. Hopefully, you know, this has been it's definitely been an interesting topic for me to look at choice and AI, and these projects have really been some good ways to illustrate it. So only remains for me to say thank you for joining us today on the Living with AI podcast. Thank you, Benedict.
Thank you very much. That was a very interesting topic to talk about.
Thank you. Thanks, Sashini.
Thank you for having us. And I want to leave a short message to everybody out there. We are presenting our research at the King's AI Festival on 26th of May and on 7th of June. If you are around London, around King's College, visit us and talk to us, and we'll be happy to receive you.
Take a leap of faith and go and find out more. Thank you very much also, Asia, for joining us today.
Thank you for providing this opportunity. I really enjoyed that, and also I think I can take the new dimension of trust to our project board.
If you want to get in touch with us here at the Living with AI podcast, you can visit the TAS website at www.tas.ac.uk, where you can also find out more about the Trustworthy Autonomous Systems Hub. The Living with AI podcast is a production of the Trustworthy Autonomous Systems Hub. Audio engineering was by Bawdy Limited. Our theme music is Weekend in Tatooine by Unicorn Heads, and it was presented by me, Sean Riley.